I'm absolutely certain that he would re-energize that. I really, really do. I think he'd be a great appointment for you. I think he'd be a fucking horrendous appointment for us.
Fantasy Football Show. Hello, patrons. Happy Wednesday. You're welcome to Tot and Ham.
Yay!
They're going to love this one. I mean, look, unfortunate defeat for you in the North London Derby.
What was fucking unfortunate about it?
No, I mean, look, you didn't deserve anything from the game, but you do want to do better in that game. We obviously lost away at Wolves. You did call it, James. You did think that we would do particularly badly.
Yeah, you didn't.
I tweeted at the time that I thought it was time that Moyes should go now. And so obviously everyone's kind of, am I on the edge in terms of, have I had enough with Moyes and all that kind of thing? So yeah, not a good weekend for either club.
Are you on the edge?
I don't want Moyes to be sacked, because if David Moyes doesn't get sacked, it means we've done enough to, we're on the way back up on an upwards trajectory.
You've lost me, mate.
Well, if Moyes doesn't get sacked, it's because we're winning games. Because if we lose a couple more games, he's going to have been sacked. I don't want Moyes to get sacked. I want Moyes to turn it around. I believe, I like David Moyes. So my frustration with so many of the team and the players is not born from anger or a negative space. It's just the changing of time. Like Aaron Creswell, for example, has been bad all season, but not even bad this season. It bleeds into the end of last season, where he gave away penalties or got sent off at crucial times in crucial games. Twice he got sent off. What was the other game he got sent off?
I can't remember. I just remember Frankfurt.
He got sent off twice. And he's been on the decline for a little while. Now, what he was particularly good at over the last 2 or 3 years was joining up play and putting in crosses and great delivery from corners and free kicks and so on and so on and so on. He's not linking up play anymore. He's not getting forward down the left-hand side. His delivery from corners has been average at best. The reason that we're not scoring goals from corners anymore is not, it's the delivery. Like, we used to have Bowen on one side, Creswell on the other. They used to whip forwards in. Like, 50% of scoring goals from corners is good delivery. Get it in at pace so that people can attack it. Our delivery on corners is floating in at the moment, and it's not delivering. And then he's making mistakes. He's now 32, turning 33. You know, players, when they get to that point, sometimes you see a sudden, oh shit, they've gone from being all right to not being all right. But has he been a good servant for West Ham? Yes, over the years. Has he, he was part of the core of people that gave us such a good culture over the last 2 or 3 years with Noble and Declan Rice and Dawson and so on. I think Creswell's part of that crew. He's a great servant for the club. He's been really good for a few years, but he's just been shit for the last 9 months to a year. And his time has come. And it's not like he's 22, 23. If he was 22, 23, I'd be like, you know what? You need to do better, mate. Maybe he's just tipped over that point. He's 33, mate. He just turned 33. Maybe he's just lost it.
Because I want to let you have your say plenty on West Ham. But obviously, we're in a little bit of a similar situation with Hugo at the moment.
Yep.
Where, you know, it's time. And everyone knows contracts up in the summer and stuff. And it will get dealt with. It's very unlikely to get dealt with this month. We don't have an option to take him out of the team right now. Like, honestly, if anybody believes that it's better off having Fraser Forster in goal, it's not. We don't have an alternative. I mean, do you? And I know you're going to say Emerson.
Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson's played plenty of games at left back.
Like, would you prefer that, really?
Yeah, I'd rather Ben Johnson play than Creswell. He's been making mistakes. The mistakes are leading to goals, you know. But I'm not mad with Aaron Creswell. Like, I don't have hatred for Aaron Creswell. He's been a good servant for the club. Antonio has been bad all season and bleeding back in the last season. He's not delivering
goals. Are we talking about West Ham or Tottenham now? I'm confused.
Mikel, Antonio, Jamaican. He's crash bang wallop. right? And
you spoke about Antonio a lot last week.
He's difficult,
mate.
And he's awkward to play against because of that. But sometimes it comes off. But when it consistently doesn't, because of a lack of quality on the ball, it's bad. It's like, when it's bad.
Let me ask
really
you a question on Antonio, right? And this is obviously something that wouldn't happen, but he has been linked to Everton.
Yeah.
I presume that would be with a loan and take his wages probably rather than an actual transfer. But let's just say hypothetically that Everton bought him tonight and he was going to line up against you at the weekend.
Well, if it was a loan, he wouldn't be allowed.
By the way, I think he'd be a brilliant signing for Everton as a short-term option. How would you feel about that? And I don't mean emotionally. I don't mean emotionally. I mean, how would you feel knowing Antonio's going up against you?
Fine. Fine, right. But Jay, he's easy to defend against if you're a good, solid defender. Like, I'd want Zuma to be fit to come up against him. He can be a handful, James, but the problem is he's not at the moment because you let him make his own mistakes. That's the problem with Antonio. Like, if they want to come and buy Mikel Antonio, he's 32 now, Mikel Antonio. He's
your highest ever Premier League goal scorer, mate. Respect.
Well, that says more about the club than it does about Mikel Antonio. He's 32, turning 33 now, right? So he'll be 33 in a month's time. Thomas Souček, mate. You know, what he offered was late arrival in the box, threat at set pieces, and goals. Like, he was good for 8 to 10 goals a season and really dangerous at set pieces and a completely different dimension. He's not getting forward and not getting into the box anymore. He's just playing as the second of a double pivot alongside Rice. And maybe that is to let Rice get forward. But if that's the plan, is to let Rice get forward, then you need a player who's way better on the ball than Thomas Souček, mate. He's not good enough on the ball for that. Again, I don't have any hatred for the guy, but he's doing a role. He's not delivering in a position that he needs to at the moment. When things really clicked and we kicked on was the second half of not last season, the season before, when the Jesse Lingard side, right? We were playing a 4-2-3-1. And that number 10 role, Jesse Lingard came in and slotted in so well, but he was almost as good as having a second striker. Right? He played that far forward, his bursting runs going in behind, the volume of goals that he scored in that role. He was a forward-minded thinking, dynamic player in that position that basically joined up and gave you a second striker when he was bursting on the run in the box. Okay, he left. Jared Bowen was providing a whole host of goals last season in a similar vein. He was pushing right up top, getting close to the striker and providing a lot of goals. This season, we have no one from that front, three behind the striker when we played that position, that's offering any of that. And Paqueta is not Jesse Lingard. Like, they're completely different players. He doesn't have the legs to be sprinting on in the way that Jesse Lingard did. Some of his running and running in behind and creating space was fantastic, Jesse Lingard. And Bowen did that similarly, but we don't have a player to do that anymore. And Jared Bowen is a shadow of himself. He's getting kicks a lot more, but he's also not adapting his game to the way that teams are sitting in against us. And all of these players, I don't have hatred for Jared Bowen. Like, there's not an issue with them not trying and not putting effort in. But when it's the same again, again and again, now you're like, come on, this is a problem. And tempo is a big problem in our games. Like, we knock the ball side to side and we're happy to do that. But we don't break on teams on the counter anymore. We don't have the ability to do that. Obviously, Scamacca hasn't settled. People like Creswell and Souček and Bowen and Antonio, no hatred for, but they're just not delivering. And it's not their fault that Moyes keeps picking them. And actually, sometimes it's not even Moyes' fault.
But hang on, right? It's not his fault that he keeps picking them. I thought that was
No, it's not their fault that he keeps picking them.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
Yeah, and Moyes trots you out. You're going to put the shirt on, right? And I get it. Look, sometimes we've got injuries. So Scamacca wasn't fit. Antonio's got to play. I get that. We don't really have another alternative on the right. But then you've got players that deliver and offer something like Benrahma, and he's in the shadows all of a sudden. You're like, why is he on the sidelines?
So I mean, I know
most of our goals are when Benrahma's on the pitch.
I know you said like you don't want him to be sacked because it will mean that you're getting better results. But how do you feel if you look at your phone now and he's been sacked?
I wish him well. I like the guy. And that's it. Let's move
on.
Shake hands and move on. I feel like you felt when Pochettino left, maybe. Your love with Pochettino runs much deeper because he took you to a Champions League final.
I was gonna say, mate.
But then, like, even the Europa semis, it's a different scale. But I don't feel any malice. But the time is right. But Moyes, I still believe. I think he can do it. Now, 2 days ago, I don't know if you've seen all the shit that's blowing up with his interview that he did with Stephen Bartlett. That's come out on Stephen Bartlett's podcast. It's an hour and a half long interview that Moyes has just done. And I listened to it today as background, and I just wanted to see what his take was. Not a lot of that podcast is about West Ham, to be fair. He talks about his upbringing and growing up as a manager and coaching and the whole situation with Manchester United and how that played out. And then he does talk about a little bit about West Ham. He talks about, there's a couple of things he said that were interesting. He said he wants to try and build a new West Ham where we shake off this tag of, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. Some days good, but you can easily roll over and have our bed.
I can't believe you started that sentence and didn't finish with the sometimes maybe shit.
Yeah. But, you know, we have our belly tickled, inconsistent, and that kind of thing with West Ham. He wants a consistent team that you know are regularly. I didn't realise in his seven of his last eight seasons at Everton or something, they finished in the top eight. I mean, that's consistency for that team back then. But the second thing he said that was really interesting in this interview was that he said, and this was recorded when we were 16. So I believe it would have been recorded last week. It was recorded within the last week and a half, let's say, is that he now believes that we have a better squad, but a worse team.
Well, that's interesting.
He said, I do think we've got a better squad, but maybe our team is not as good right now.
So who have you lost that makes the team worse? Or is it full circle, the ageing of the players, off, like you said, and Bowen dropping forward?
Yeah. Okay. And look, if Zuma had been fit for certain games, I think we'd be having a different conversation because he has so much assuredness at the back. I mean, he's a very, very good player. And it's the leadership and the calmness that Zuma brings when he's there as well. Maxwell Cornet, in the flashes that we saw him, gives us a really... He's a goal threat, is Maxwell Cornet. He's a very different dimension.
I forgot you had him.
Exactly, right? I mean, the games that he's played, and he played quite a few European games, he's a goal threat, and he's a completely different dimension.
When you signed him, we said this, didn't we? Injury-prone. Yeah. I bet he spends a lot of time injured, unfortunately.
But he's one that, like, suddenly just injured, and then you think, oh, he's coming back, and then he just is gone for 6 months. He just disappears off the face of the earth. He hasn't had him. And bedding in some of these players, I can understand, will take a little bit of time. But making change, like not being able to make changes within game, is a problem. Let me pull it up. So I was talking to some guys in a WhatsApp group with my brother and a couple of other guys. And my brother was kind of making the point that all of our problems are defensive. Right? It's all because we're bad at the back. And that means that the attacking players then don't have any stability to build on. But I'm like, okay, the only teams that have conceded less than us this season...
I was going to say, yeah, go on, carry on.
This was prior to this weekend. Just, I should add that. The only teams that have conceded less than us this season: Arsenal, City, United, Newcastle, Liverpool, Chelsea.
Yeah, you're like sixth or seventh best defensive record or something in the league.
Only teams to have scored less than us this season. This might change over the weekend. Everton, Wolves, Forest. They're the only teams to have scored less than us. The seventh best defensive record, 17th best offensive record. We only scored 15 goals prior to this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's clear. That's where the problem
is. Of our 18 games, eight of them clean sheets. Eight clean sheets isn't bad. And six games, we've only conceded one goal. So 14 of our 18 games, one goal or no goals. Three times we conceded two. And only once this season, we conceded three. Like, that's not a bad defensive record. It's sloppy mistakes.
It's the top four and Chelsea have a better defensive record than you. And only Wolves have scored less.
Yeah. We never lost a game by 3 goals. We lost 5 games by 2 goals and 6 games by 1 goal. We've just never been battered. But the problem
you never get battered. I always say that.
But the problem is the offensive stuff, James.
Yeah, agreed.
We never look like we're going to score. But teams are.
It's also worth saying, having a quick look at the table, no one's lost more games than you.
Yeah, and it's sloppy losses, right? We never look like we're going to score because teams have different styles of play, right? Counter-attacking teams. I think Brentford's a very good example where they can move it back to front very quickly and they'll get in behind and create chances and score. That's what we did last season and the season before. We were very good at hitting teams on the counter and getting Bowen in behind, Antonio running at you, Fornals joining in. Teams are wise enough to sit in a little bit and not give us that space anymore. And we don't have the Man City dimension, which is pass, 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 and then find that killer pass to unlock a defence and score. We're not good enough to do what Man City do or Barcelona do or any of these teams that are elite on the ball. So how are we scoring goals? What's our offensive strategy now? I don't know what our offensive strategy is. We seem to pass it side to side, and it's not great. But Declan Rice, for me, is not good. I'm struggling to see him develop into a 6 or an 8. You know, he's a number 4 holding midfielder who's good on the ball, but I don't see him as a transition player that can bring the ball forward or.
Do you think?
Let me describe it differently, if I may. I don't think Declan Rice is the player you want to dictate the tempo of a game. So if you want a player in the middle of the park that picks the ball up of the midfield and decides, like, playing it, spreading it wide, going long, going short, but the one that links it all up and dictates the tempo of the attacks or the play, Rice is not that player.
Rice is only strong at a quick tempo.
Yeah. He's good on the ball and he's a good footballer. He's not just the tackle and give. He's good on the ball, but he's not good enough to dictate the tempo of a game. You want someone else to be able to do that. So it's a real frustration at the moment, and I don't think it's still not for a want of lack of effort.
Do you think Rice will get in the Arsenal team?
Well, controversial statement coming up, but as I said to Clayton the other day, if you buy Rice, then you can sell the alleged accused criminal. Right, get rid. Like, it's a chance to get rid of him, basically.
Would he get in ahead of Martin? It was the only thing worth me singing on Sunday. It was Thomas Partey. You know what you are.
So he's comparable to Partey as a defensive midfielder. Xhaka is better going forward than Rice. Like, Xhaka is playing this advanced role, right? If you said Odegaard and Xhaka are both 8s, or Odegaard is 8/10, but Xhaka's an 8. Xhaka plays that 8 position way better than Rice will be able to do.
Yeah, I wouldn't want Rice kind of moving into the front 5 and back to goal on the edge of the box. I know what you're saying, yeah. No.
And he's not Odegaard. So then it's only Partey's position that he can take, really. And if it's just defensive work, like, he's my boy, I'd back him over Partey any day of the week. But it's not like he's miles ahead of Thomas Partey. It's not like you're revolutionising them.
I wouldn't say he's ahead. He's probably a nicer bloke.
Yeah, exactly.
But I wouldn't say he's ahead on pitch. I mean, to be fair, Partey has had a brilliant season.
A great season. So it's not black and white, James. I mean, would they want him and should they get him if they can get him? Yes. Arsenal's the only club out of the top 6 that I'd be happy if Declan Rice left to go and join. But I don't know. The other thing with David Moyes is some of his comments recently are a bit delusional. You can't pull the wool over our eyes. We know what's going on. Like the Wolves game at the weekend, he's like, I can't fault the players for effort. This was on the club's Twitter feed channel. You know, they do their interviews for the club. Like, and we had chances and we deserved something from the game. And another day we would have won the game. And stop it. Like, we're watching these games. Yes, quite often there's one or two chances that could have gone in, but look at the 90 minutes and the performance and be realistic. Like, we're not We shouldn't be 10th in the table. We shouldn't be 11th in the table. We are where we are because we deserve to be there. He's delusional, mate. Those comments don't help, because then it makes you think you don't know what you're doing. You know, if he was upfront and honest, I'd probably be more open to him staying. But at the moment, he's not.
Do you know who the favourite is in the sack race at the moment?
It's got to be Lampard.
It's not.
Well, there's a lot of rumours that came out today that the board have had a meeting, and if we lose against Everton, Moyes is gone. Based on those rumours today, I'd say, obviously, Moyes.
Todd's on.
You know, and it's all, Moyes will then go back to Everton and all this shit.
Would you take Lampard?
No. No.
Someone asked me the other day on the Bird app if you take him, and I was like, I don't think so.
No.
Would you take Rafa Benitez?
No. But I have permanent appointment, long term, or till the end of the season.
Even just till the end of the season, fine.
Probably.
What about Nuno?
Nah.
I think short term appointments are getting mentioned, because I think, obviously, what's happened with the sad loss of David Gold has obviously cut the club open a bit. And I know there's intentions to have quite a bit of a memorial for him against Everton at the weekend. There is a school of thought that West Ham did not want to sack David Moyes ahead of this. And they should have every right to believe that Ewell Wright had managed the team on Saturday and believe that they could beat Everton. And so there is some thinking that irrespective of the result, it might change after the weekend. You've got a few tough fixtures afterwards, as you know. I think that because of what's happened behind the scenes, and we think obviously the takeover will change officially in March, that I think the football club are potentially looking at something short term to then make a different appointment in June. Or if the temporary solution works out quite nicely, as David Moyes did second time around, then it becomes a permanent appointment. We never had the conversation last week that I said that we should have, which is, you, in my opinion, should go all out for Pochettino.
I agree. I mean, if he turned up and came through the door, I would be fucking so happy, mate. And do you believe Poch is the right manager for bringing through young talent?
Oh, 100%. I mean, look at what you said last week about your academy.
The under-18s, mate, at the moment, they played 12, won 12, scored 46 goals and conceded 5 or something. Like, the quality and the level of talent coming through is there to be seen. Like, take it with a pinch of salt. So much with these academies, you don't see players that actually make it. But the under-18s are smashing teams, 4s and 5s consistently at the moment. That would be my dream appointment. I don't want to say it because I just don't think it will ever happen. I think he's destined for a bigger club than West Ham. But if we were to get him, that would be amazing if we were to be able to get Pochettino.
I really, really think push for it. And I really, really think
I don't have their number, mate.
I really, really think that unless a conversation has happened where he may be being lined up to retake our job, then I think he'd take it. I spoke to you in the past about the London gig and the London idea, right? So if the Chelsea job suddenly come up, say they did change with Potter, which we're obviously not expecting, would they go for him? I'm not convinced they would, to be totally honest. So if you did want to come back here, you start, what jobs are on the table? Yeah, no, nobody with anything between their ears at the moment is going to take the Everton job, other than someone like Sean Dyche, who probably could firefight it and save it. But that could seriously damage an experienced manager's reputation, as it did with Benitez, right? I think it'd be a great appointment for you. I think he would make you proud to support West Ham again, which I'm not saying that you don't feel, but I think you would go every week with a real feeling and belief and a pride in the identity of what West Ham United are. And West Ham United as an identity are not, should be challenging for top four or anything like that. West Ham is about progression. It's about trying to be the best you can do. At this minute in time, it's about trying to get back in the top half, playing good football again, winning more fucking football matches than you lose as a start, right?
Scoring
and
a goal
with
mate.
With the academy group that you've got, I'm absolutely certain that he would re-energize that. I really, really do. I think it'd be a great appointment for you. I think it'd be a fucking horrendous appointment for us.
Yeah, quite possibly.
I think it will be. I think it will be the football club's biggest mistake that they've made of appointments yet, even bigger than Mourinho.
You know, when fans lose it with their team, or start making these crazy statements like he's got to go and he's got to go and all this kind of thing. I'm not like this ranty, like, and maybe the shit we see on the Bird app and the shit we see on YouTube and that kind of thing is people playing up to it. My assessment on Moyes going and the disappointment of some of the players is very level-headed and logical. It's not emotional, because I don't have any anger or hatred for any of these guys. They've all done a job in their time for the club, but we're not adapting, and we're not. Look at what you see in front of you, and we're not changing with it. We've bought these players like Scamacca and Paqueta, and sure, it's going to take a bit of time to adapt to them. But yeah, I really, we need to play Paqueta as alongside Rice. We need to drop Fornals in to the number 10 position, because he's got the legs to come and join the striker, whether it's Scamacca or whoever else. Benrahma off the left, Bowen on the right, Rice and Paqueta in the middle. I'd play Ben Johnson on the left, Zuma and Aguerd in the middle. Right back would be Sofal at the moment, because we don't have any alternative. And you're going to say Fabianski, and look, if it's Areola, it's Areola. And if we play team...
You would explain yourself on Flappy, that's fine, mate.
Yeah, but and if that's the team and we can play that consistently, I think we'll do better than we have been. But I want to see Fornals drop in there, because he's the only one that can do what Lingard did previously with the legs joining in the attacks. And he scores a fair few goals, Fornals, when he's given the opportunity. Benrahma's got to play off the left as well.
Except Nalanzini.
He's just not been getting a look in. I mean, he was getting a look in the European games, but they've obviously disappeared. So I'm surprised that he hasn't been getting a look in.
Felt like he was coming back to something last season.
You know, he's always neat and tidy on the ball. He always gives us something. So, you know what happened? He likes to fucking pop up against you lot. So we'll play in 3 weeks' time.
Oh, good. Can't wait. I feel I should clarify my Pochettino comments, because some began, how can he be a good appointment for West Ham and a bad appointment for Tottenham? I want you to think about a couple of things when I say that. One is the academy status, which we've spoken about a little bit recently. Status is incorrect, but the development of potential players and the path right through to the first team right now, there is a lot of West Ham kids who may make this. There is probably one at Tottenham at the moment. Alfie Devine, maybe. And that's blocked. And that's really, really important, because you look at what Poch did with Kane, with Harry Winks, dragged Danny Rose up off the floor, improved Kyle Walker. I mean, bought Eric Dier for a packet of crisps. Dele Alli. Dele Alli was this 5 million kid we took a punt on. And it was like, well, he'll be a great development for the squad in a few years, etc. And he went and played for England at the Euros 9 months later, right?
So on the academy, David Moyes, in his interview with Stephen Bartlett, he did say he understands what he wants West Ham to be. Is Essex is a area where there's a lot of young kids coming through, and also it's financially sometimes a bit deprived.
And Tottenham should be similar. All over that area, by the way.
Yeah, he recognises that as part of what we want to develop. And I see where you're coming from, but that's why, yeah. And you don't have that coming through, do you?
No. But then the argument against will be, right, okay, so it goes back with a principal idea of what Tottenham probably should be, which is go and invest in young players. And that's fine and good, and that's well. But what happens if it fails? Where are Tottenham at? Let's just say, hypothetically, that Conte goes at the end of the season, which I think probably right now is the most likely scenario. Or with so far adrift of fourth and out of the cups in April that he just goes, fuck this shit. There's no point me doing 3-4 games. I'm going to fuck off now. That's probably the most likely. And the most likely person to take his job is Pochettino. So I'll ask, Fast forward 15 months, and Tottenham in October, November are floundering in 10th. The football's not good, etc., etc. And it's clear as day that the right thing to do is sacking. What's going to happen?
Well, end of next season, you mean?
No, I'm saying, like, say Pochettino takes over again in the summer, and 15 months in, we're not talking about one season, but 15 months in, there's no improvement. It's the same shit. It looks clear.
Oh, they'll sack him. They'll move him on.
Really?
At your club?
Yeah.
No, I think they'd sack him.
I think, like...
Why, do you feel like if once Pochettino's
I feel like if they go back to him, I mean, A, I think it will fail. But B, I think they'll be committing to themselves where they're tying their hands behind their back even worse than they've done with the current manager. The other big fear I have is over Pochettino. I think he's a really good manager, obviously, clearly I do. Best manager Tottenham have had by a distance. I think he'd be right for you at the moment because it's on the floor, literally. Right, it's dangerous. Whereas we're fifth. To be honest with you, that's probably where we should be. If you polled people at the start of the season, I know a lot of people would have said Tottenham would finish top four, right? But generally speaking, in terms of the financial weight of what's around us, fifth is roughly probably where we should be. So you could look at that and go, well, Tottenham are basically where they should be. My massive concern is that he had an incredible period, right? The period between 2016 and the end of 2018, seriously, 3 years of incredible football. Over that period, we were the most consistent team in this country. Over two calendar years, we finished first, right? You don't get nothing for a January to December thing, but I'm going to claim it twice. I'm going to claim it twice anyway. My big concern is that I reflect on it, and the second that Moussa Dembélé left that football club, it went to fuck. And it was interesting. Someone tweeted yesterday and said, 4 years to the day since Dembélé left Tottenham. I've watched 4 years of very fucking mediocre shit since then, other than the last 3 months of last season, which was very good under Antonio Conte. And I'm very, very concerned that when I even think about the bigger picture of Tottenham and the two really good things that Tottenham had, something very clear in common in this Premier League era. One is Moussa Dembélé, the other is Luka Modric. Now, don't get me wrong, these players are really, really rare and hard to find, right?
Someone in the middle of the field that controls the tempo of the game.
The ambition of my football club, with all due respect, and I mean that seriously, is very different to the ambition of yours right now.
Right, so now,
as much as I can say Tottenham being fifth is probably roughly where most people would think that's where we should be, the fans right now consider that a fucking failure. By the way, that goes for every other club in the Big Six currently, that anything below fourth is obviously clearly a failure. So that spreads right through, and it will start spreading to Newcastle over the next few years as well. I don't think that he can get a team at the top level, elite level, without a midfield player like that. And I don't know where Tottenham begin to find one. The only way to go and find one is probably literally doing what they did back in 2008, and watching this little magician play for Croatia at Wembley, who just looked like this skinny kid, but fuck me, could he play, and go and get him straight out of Croatia and take the chance on him. Go and find, you know, like Kvaratskhelia, who's a very different player, but he's at Napoli, right? This kid's Georgian. Go and find this. Where is this next one?
But I mean, look,
everyone else is looking for it.
How important to Arsenal is Odegaard? But he's that guy, right, for them.
Well, he's more offensive, in fairness.
Sure, but he's just neat and tidy on the ball and can control. He's the dots, give him the ball and it will all be all right. He's that guy.
That's absolutely it. I mean, if you relate it to modern-day Tottenham now, the only player Tottenham have got anything like that is either Kane or Kulusevski, and they're way too far up the pitch to really be that.
Is Bentancur not good enough on the ball?
I love Rod. He's brilliant, right? He's been such a miss for us very recently, and he's available for tomorrow night. And no doubt will make a difference. Although I don't know if they should throw him straight in for that fixture tomorrow night, because I don't particularly think it's going to. As much as I've criticised City recently, I don't particularly think that's going to make a difference. And it might be better to get him right for give him half hour and get him or give don't know, give him 45, get him ready properly for Monday against Fulham, for example. That might be the better solution. And that's not because I want Tottenham to lose tomorrow night. As I've heard a few people say, those people can fuck right off. I want to go to Man City and try and win and get this Arsenal obsession out of your head. But in terms of, like, you spoke about Rice, right? And we spoke about fast tempo and slow tempo. Like, Luka could do both. And the doctor was obviously such a unique player in the sense that Moussa Dembele couldn't pass the ball as well as Declan Rice. Moussa Dembele couldn't pass the ball as well as Rodrigo Bentancur. Couldn't get the fucking thing off him. He used to give us domination over games. And since he left the football club, and since even Pochettino could see it beginning to decline in 2018, Tottenham started moving towards a counter-attacking philosophy, even under Pochettino. Because there was no... What do you replace Moussa Dembele with? We replaced him with Moussa Sissoko, who I ended up voting for as our player of the season at the end of that season because his improvement in 18-19 was so dramatic. But it was purely on work rate, basically. It was nothing like Moussa. It's called the doctor for a reason, right? You give him the ball, everything gets better. The issue, if you relate it to the current team, moving away from Pochettino to Conte's team now, is that creativity, I speak about it so much, it's not really there. And there's no signs of it coming. I look at it now, and even at the window now, and I said on the pod the other day, don't give him any money. I don't think there's any point. The only name that's keep getting mentioned is Pedro Porro from Sporting Lisbon, right wing back. Now, clearly we need one. And if he comes through the door, and if he's a player who can play right back or right wing in a back four system for whoever the next manager is, get him. If he can literally only play right wing back, please don't buy him. Like, don't bother, because someone else is going to come in and the chances are they're going to play a back four because there's no other fucking elite team around that's playing a back three. It's moved away from that now. It's all about in between lines and stuff. And Tottenham allow domination of the midfield. I spoke about it on Monday's pod, where there's sympathy for the two in there, particularly as Saar played. But even it's the same even when it's Højbjerg and Bentancur. They get absolutely dominated in that midfield area against almost anybody because they're fucking outnumbered. Go and watch the first half against Wolves from game week three. Go and watch the game against Chelsea in game week two. They just get demolished numerically in the midfield area. And that's a problem that I just don't think is getting sorted. Why are we not getting or looking at a creative footballer? It's doing my head in. And everything that's getting leaked, we know shit gets leaked from the club or even the manager or whomever who want this player. There's no links to a creative player. I almost want, even though I wouldn't necessarily, I think James Maddison would maybe be out of reach, for example, just fucking link him. Let me have something to go, that's fucking exciting today. That would be an interest. There's nothing. And we get linked with everyone. We don't get linked to many creative footballers.
Would you put Casemiro into that bracket of players in midfield that you give them the ball and then they're okay?
No. But what I would say is, if you played a back four, let me put it to you like this. If Tottenham played a 4-2-3-1, would a midfield two of Casemiro and Bentancur potentially be good enough to win a Premier League title? Now, you need obviously 9 other good players, but could that be good enough? Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it could.
Now, I'm trying to look at the 10
would have to be creative, Suj.
Right, okay. Understood. Are you saying that Moussa Dembele was a 10 for you?
Nah.
Okay, 8. But someone in and around there that is creative enough.
The thing that Moussa gave us, which was such a unique skill set, like Luka was clever, right? Even when he played for us before he went to Madrid, he knew when, right, we've got to calm down, we've got to keep the ball, or he knew when to lift the team and start carrying the ball forward for the team. He's the best player I've ever seen in terms of shift of tempo in a midfield position. But with Moussa, we could go to the fucking Etihad, and in theory, we could go and have 60% of the ball and stuff. That'd be a bit different against Guardiola's team now. I get that and stuff. But we knew that we would go anywhere. Etihad, Anfield, Old Trafford, whatever. And we knew that we could go and dominate them because he would be in the team. We went 15 months in the Premier League without losing a game when he played more than an hour. And by the way, over that period, you think, oh, maybe he missed 4 months. No, there's like 6 games in there. Over a period from we lost at Old Trafford opening day 2015 to when we lost our first game of the season the following year at Chelsea in November, We lost five league games. He didn't play more than an hour in any of them. Other than that, I think he only missed two other games, I think.
Stats don't lie. We kept him fit.
No, stats don't lie. And Pochettino's Tottenham, before he got in the team, was shit. Now, he inherited a lot of shit, but in his first season, we conceded 50-plus goals, which were also on course to fucking concede this season, by the way. And then again, as soon as he went, it went to shit. You got to Champions League final, James. Do you know, from the moment Dembele left, that week, we won at Fulham. And that was, second week of January. And we won the last minute. Harry Winks scored a header. From that moment till Pochettino got sacked, do you know how many away games Tottenham won? All competitions.
10.
2.
Whoa.
Dortmund and Ajax.
Wow.
It was going to fuck. Mm-hmm. That's why he got sacked, and everybody forgets that. It was gone. It was over. You can go back and listen to it, even when he got sacked. I wasn't in tears on the pod or what has the football club done. I was upset emotionally about it, but I could see. I referenced the Sheffield United game, completely outplayed by Chris Wilder, Sheffield United. And I sat there watching the whole game, knowing it was over because of the way we were getting dominated at White Hart Lane on our own patch. So there's no signs that the club's looking at a creative player. You might argue the most creative midfield player, but it might turn out to be Alfie Devine. As I said, he's the one who has got potential, but he's not going to get anywhere near the first team now. And I don't think he'd be playing even if Pochettino was our manager and stuff. I just think it's a big mistake if the club goes back to Pochettino in the summer. And I think that's what they'll do. Thomas Tuchel's name's being mentioned. I also think that's another mistake. How many ex-Chelsea managers can we fucking appoint? I think Tuchel is elite. I've said that. I think he's a magnificent tactical coach. And that would certainly improve, because the one thing he'd have that obviously Conte doesn't have is tactical flexibility. Like, Conte's only got two tricks and they both involve a back three, unfortunately. Tuchel can go around numerous different systems. I'm sure the Chelsea guys will tell you. But he's a fucking dickhead. It's clear. I reference back the first pod we did with Ted Moore when he got the job. And we sat there and we predicted probably 2.5 years or so. Because he falls out with people. He did it at PSG. Even at Dortmund, it was going. And so it's the same cycle. And it's like it's become a win at all costs mentality for Tottenham. But it's a win at all costs mentality when you're competing with, now it's six other monsters and other good teams like Brighton, etc. And I reference back the piece that Daniel Levy released in 2021. When the DNA, and he said, and I quote, "As a club, we have been so focused on delivering the stadium and dealing with the impact of the pandemic that I feel we lost sight of some key priorities on what's truly in our DNA." That DNA goes on to say, "We shall focus on the recruitment of a new head coach." They went and then got fucking Nuno. "We are acutely aware of the need to select someone whose values reflect those of our great club and return to playing football with the style for which we are known, free-flowing, attacking, and entertaining, whilst continuing to embrace our desire to see young players flourish from our academy alongside experienced talent." Nobody from that fucking academy, admittedly the talent's not there, is getting into that first team while Antonio Conte's there. The free-flowing, attacking football, it's not there. He's not there. It's 6 months now. It's 6 months and I've watched one good football match from Tottenham in its entirety this season, which I referenced on Monday, was the game against Fulham in game week 6. It's a miracle we're even fifth. Defensively, we're horrendous. So you could even say, right, so what, you're tough to beat or something? Or we conceded more goals. Tell your mate that we've conceded more goals than you in the league, Serge.
Exactly. As I said, there's only the other big six in Newcastle that have conceded less.
So he's meant to be defensively strong and disciplined. And listen, again, all that was there at the end of last season. Look at the amount of goals Tottenham conceded in those last 10 games or so. Like, it's a handful. It was like five or something like that. 23 points from the final 10 games of the season and a blistering number of goals in that period as well. We were playing some brilliant football. The end of last season was the best football that Tottenham have played since we won at Everton 6-2 right at the end of 2018. And that was a much better Everton than this one, by the way. But for some reason, and yeah, Kulusevski's fitness has possibly had quite a bit to do with that, it's regressed this season. I don't see how anybody can look at Tottenham right now and not say it's regressed. Now, I don't think that Antonio Conte should necessarily be sacked, but I think it is very, very clear to everybody at this stage that this is not long term. It's like people have this pipe dream out there. Give him the money. Give him the money so he can spend all this yada, yada, yada. And yet go back to when he was appointed and we knew 2.5 years max. We knew that then. We've never gone different from probably summer of 2024 would be the best case scenario for Antonio Conte. And that's because his systems and his tactics are so repetitive and so recycled and rehashed to the players that they hit a fucking wall and they don't want to do it for him anymore. Then maybe they've already hit that wall. It's possible.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Because a lot of what I'm seeing don't make sense on what I saw at the end of last season. And I know he's a great manager. I just think, unfortunately, he's probably moved on a little bit now where the game's changed. And I'm sure Chelsea fans will also reference, obviously, that he won the title with brilliant, amazing achievement. And first and foremost, he won that title by going to his system, by the way. But they'd finished 10th the year before. So no European football. No fucking complaints. Oh, yeah, but he won Serie A with Inter Milan when they were in the Champions League. Yeah, they won one group game and bombed out. So we spoke about this even when we were doing well. How fortunate were we at the end of the season? I said on Monday's pod, Arsenal maybe been a bit fortunate with injuries this year. Arsenal didn't finish above us last year because of injuries. And we said that in the running. It will probably be which team keeps their players fit will finish above the other one. There is one thing that's really, really annoying me, and the advanced tiers will know this because I did a piece on it on Monday. Do you know how many first halves Tottenham have won this season, Suj?
No, but I know if you second half champions or whatever, so probably fuck all, to be honest. Maybe one. I'm trying to think, when have you gone in at half time winning?
It's not that bad. Everyone's won at least two.
Okay, four.
The answer's five. For your reference, you've won three. We've conceded 15 first half goals in our 19 games. That's less than one a game. Yeah, it's only over 45 minutes though. The only teams that have conceded more goals in the first half than us this season are Bournemouth, Leeds, and Southampton. You've conceded less, 13, for compared to Newcastle 2, Arsenal 4, Man City 6. Man United 13 is not far off, but they conceded six in the first two in first halves against Brighton and Brentford. Yeah, you'd already referenced it. Second halves this season, top. And it's not unclear. 39 points. We've won 12 second halves out of 19 games this season. And factor in, we haven't scored in the last two second halves that we've played in home games. So what does that tell you? Well, it tells me that there's still something there, because as much as I might have said, well, maybe they've already hit that wall, the fact that they keep getting better in games suggests that there is desire still there. There has to be. Even on Sunday, clearly it was better second half. And I know a lot of that is because Arsenal obviously stepped up and they were quite happy with what they got, which is fair enough. But it was better. Every second half by Aston Villa at home has been better than the first half, basically for the whole season. We've conceded 12 second half goals. Now tell me how, against Arsenal in the first half, we're passive, right? We sit behind the ball. We're just sitting behind it, letting them dawdle on the ball, do whatever they want, basically right up to our penalty area. And that's where we was engaging, penalty area. Should be fucking engaging at least on the halfway line. Engaging on the penalty area. So how can it be that we're more passive in the first half, and yet when we start chasing games in the second half, we concede less goals than when we sit behind the ball? And we also go from scoring 10 first half goals to 27 second half goals. Tells me that actually, if he lets them off the fucking leash, there's still something there.
That is common sense to me. Like, if you said to me, I want Spurs to be
playing, it's not to a fucking manager at the moment.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And again, you know, I mentioned that David Moyes is delusional with some of the things that he says. And you're like, are you watching the same things we're watching? The problem you guys have is obviously he makes comments that are political or posturing or that kind of thing. And all of that is such a, that's a real wind up when people do that to managers.
I bet you don't know this, dear Serge. This is more, this could go on forever, this one. So guess who put a statement out yesterday, Serge?
The Supporters Trust, the PTA,
do you know this?
Watch.
Do you know this
or
not?
I didn't know. No, go on, tell me.
Statement yesterday, right? Fuck's sake. 2 weeks ago, we asked the board of Tottenham Hotspur to outline its strategy and vision. The club obviously went, for those who didn't hear it last week, the club went back to them and said, we'll answer your fucking questions when the window's shut.
Yeah.
Today, Antonio Conte asked for the same thing. He's fucking manipulated the Supporters Trust, right? They go on to say, it's clear to everyone that for there to be a chance of success at this club, the vision and strategy of the board and manager must align. We understand the widespread discontent among Spurs fans who have loyally supported the club through the 22 years of the current ownership, years in which success on the pitch has not matched the increase in the price of watching the team. It is time for the club's board to clarify its approach to achieving success on the pitch and to commit the necessary resource and support to secure that. The club cannot continue to drift from one approach to another. We urge the club to reconsider their decision not to provide answers to the key questions raised by the Supporters Trust and many individual supporters until February, and to provide those answers now. It is perfectly possible to do this without compromising the club's commercial position. Spurs fans deserve greater clarity about the club's aspirations. We've already fucking come out and said, we accept you'll tell us in February. Oh my God, Serge. This is the thing as well. Another thing, just to add it in quickly, right? Is like Camp Levy and Camp Conte. It's like, if you say you're like, you think Antonio Conte should go, you're like, ooh, you're pro Enic, and Levy should say, oh, if they go, it's like, oh, you're pro Conte. Conte, it's like, you can't criticize one without the other. Tottenham fans, nearly all of them at the moment, are off their head and fucking confused. To go as far that even the Supporters Trust are now doing, I mean, what is that? And I've spoke about them trying to build relationship with the club again. So they've gone and asked the club. The club said February. Okay, fine. The football club lose to Arsenal. Conte does a press conference. Conte, he's a clever bastard, right? He knows that he'll know that all this is going on and the questions are being asked, and suddenly drops in the press conference yesterday. Why is Paratici, basically, he didn't name him, but why is Paratici not sitting here asking your questions about the long-term vision of the football club? Which, actually, he's got a point. But yeah. But he knows. He's almost creating a wedge. The people see that. Antonio Conte is creating a wedge within the whole football club at the moment.
Yeah.
He cannot be the long-term manager of this football club, unfortunately. And I don't even dislike him. Honestly, there's still stuff there when I look at them second-half stats and think, just let him go. I want him to let them go, and I want them to go for it. And I completely get Man City tomorrow night. That's different, right? If you go there and you just throw, you're going to go and get destroyed. I get that. Go and take Fulham on Monday, honestly, because if you just sit off the ball and you allow crosses and shit to come in the box, Mitrovic's going to fucking score anyway. So you might as well go there and have a go. Don't think we will, mate, to be totally honest. Oh, one more thing. I see you're edging to go.
I'm just thinking this is a long episode.
Yeah, well done.
But I think we do need to...
Just very quickly, Paul O'Keefe yesterday on Twitter as well, just to add to everyone's joy at the moment.
The predict Conte champion,
which he no longer is, clearly, at the moment. It's his fault that I got my hopes up that Bentancur was going to play on Sunday. He has sent a tweet yesterday saying that he's basically a certainty that Kane will leave in the summer, and that the football club will. And to be fair, this has been dramatized because it was only a reply to someone, and therefore I don't think it wasn't him saying it's 100%. It was him saying, listen, think about this logically. The football club's not going to miss the opportunity of 100 million to keep a footballer for one season. They're going to take the money. And that is logical. My argument, as you might have heard me, particularly on some of the streams I've done recently, is that I think I don't see how the football club can sell him at the moment. How do they, with what the fans are asking for at the moment, how do they sell Harry Kane? How do they sell that? How do they sell that as we've done everything to try and sell him? Nate, they've actually done the same thing. You've taken the money. So that's the one way. That's the one way that I can actually see Kane going. My position on Kane is absolutely, doesn't feel any different about how I'd be emotional about him breaking the record and stuff. He deserves to do it. Look, as long as it doesn't go to Arsenal, or I'd obviously prefer him go abroad, but he's not going to go abroad because he wants to do the Premier League record. I wouldn't be surprised if he does end up staying and leaving Tottenham on a free transfer, for example. The football club should think about it sensibly. And I have, you'll know, I've said recently, the football club should sell him. Because I think what we need to do is we need to get a young, vibrant, energetic football team again. And the only way to do it might be to take him out of it. And that's our best shot, honestly, not this season, but in forthcoming seasons, of remaining competitive. Because while we're trying to push on and we're paying 60 million for Richarlison, Chelsea are just dropping 85 million on players that people haven't heard of a couple of weeks ago. And Mudryk is a very good talent, by the way. But we know they were looking at Enzo Fernandez for more than 100 million and stuff. Arsenal have been linked with a player from Leverkusen today, who Leverkusen reportedly want 100 million for and stuff. Tottenham are always one step ahead, step behind. And the two times that they got themselves in a position to get in there was because they invested in young players. And that's what the club needs to go back to doing. And that is completely at odds with the current manager. And I actually think signings like Jed Spence say that Tottenham probably are going back to that vision. And it's probably part why Conte's rejected it so fucking hard. Go, that's your vision. I'm not interested in your vision.
Interesting. For me, Manchester United is the obvious. If they get into Champions League, that's where I can see Harry Kane.
Yeah, we know they need a player. To be honest, if you said to
Kane to Man United is the
you said to me right now, Harry Kane goes to Manchester United in the summer, that's kind of like the best of the bad world for me.
Mm.
You said, like, if he goes to Liverpool, I'm fine. I'd have been all right if he went to City. I'd just rather he didn't go to Chelsea, but I'm not that fussed about it. As long as you don't go to, I guess the one thing, if Tottenham do sell him, they won't sell him to Arsenal. There's no chance of him doing the Judas on us, if you will.
No, indeed. Look, there's an hour of Tottenham for you listeners. I hope you've enjoyed it. It was just a real kind of hopefully balanced fans perspective. There's a lot of obviously positive feedback on your breakdown of the North London derby, James, which, but you know, you're always honest and fair. So what else did
someone message? So, FPL Boardline Podcast sent a really nice tweet out and said, always amazing me how James keeps a level head about it and stuff. That really nice. Thank you. Someone messaged back and did the all right, mate, he's not going to shag you. You know that one, right?
Oh, so did he?
Yeah, some little account with like 13 followers. So I just messaged back and said, how do you know? no response. This is what you got to do to these people. Put them in their fucking place. Talking of shagging, I mean, let's just end this on a happy note.
Sure. I don't know what direction this is going in, but sure.
Surely you know what happened last night.
Oh, the BBC. And then Gary Lineker tweeted, so someone basically put a mobile phone behind the thing and just ringtone. It was the ringtone.
Sorry, I've got to tell this now because I feel like Tottenham is the right place to tell this. It's got to be the Q&A on the Tottenham.
The last 2 minutes of an hour of Tottenham when we've got 10 people left. Yes,
it can only be on this or the Q&A, and I feel like now is the right time. So, I to be honest, I don't watch many pre-match stuff, but it was only 15 minutes. And I wasn't overly fussed about watching the game. I was like, it's background noise, whatever, fine. And Kate was making dinner. So dinner comes and it's like 7:35 or something. So I'm sitting there eating dinner, literally. Yeah. And we've got Wolves and Liverpool on the TV. And suddenly you can hear some woman's having a fucking orgasm. And obviously, I just start pissing myself. And I know exactly what it's from as well.
Yeah, because it's common meme, right? You see, people always send the video when it dubs into it.
I can't remember what it is at the start, but it's like whatever it is, it's like people talking or saying, it forces you to put your phone like up on full blast. Yeah. No, that's the trick.
It's It's like there's loads of videos where people have something normal happening and suddenly the audio changes to that. It happens on loads of videos. Yeah, so it came on. I saw it came on Twitter because I wasn't watching the actual game, and I pissed myself laughing. And I said to my wife, "Yeah, have a listen to this. What's going on here on the BBC?" And she listens to it, and it was a really poor audio quality. She looked at me. She's like, "I don't understand." I was like, "Listen." She listens. She goes, "Listen." They looked at me again. She goes, "What? It's like some squeaking or something in the background."
Oh, wow.
Fine. Now, you've never been. She, obviously, she's not in any WhatsApp groups with just a bunch of lads then, because she hasn't been sent any
She,
ridiculous
well,
memes like
no.
that
When
previously.
here's the thing, my missus didn't have a clue what was. I had to explain to her what it was, which was the most stupid thing that I did. But obviously, I'm literally pissing myself while we're having dinner because
They have
it's
a bit
so
well,
funny.
to be fair.
So,
Gary Lineker,
it
good.
was great. It was great, Gary. And not so much Danny Murphy and Paul Wynn sitting there like all stony face. Like to be honest, you should have just gone with it and laughed. And of course, the fact it happens on the BBC is the best bit about it as well. But the problem was, I started trying to explain to the missus what it was, and it wasn't the fact about it was art. It was clear what the noises were. It was me going, oh, I know what this is, and that's what I said, like a fucking idiot. And she was like, oh, do you? And I was like, oh fuck, I gotta explain this now. And but it was even better the fact it wasn't like it was a noise that was there all the time. It was the fact that it kept stopping and starting again. So I don't know, it was, I guess they'd set it as a ringtone or something and were phoning the
Someone's
phone.
phoning
It
it.
must have been.
That's it.
So it was like, oh, they've got rid of it. They've because it sounded like someone was piping it in.
Yeah.
Oh,
And
it
then
was
you're like,
bloody
who's got a
funny.
hack into the feed? Or you're trying to solve it as a software problem or something to do with the stream, but it's
Yeah.
actually hardware
They
physically.
must have been, you can imagine. I mean, exactly what you said, fair fucks to Lineker and stuff. Like, he dealt with it all right. So even Alan Shearer stitched Danny Murphy up as soon as it started. Because as soon as the game started, there was a floodlight failure, right? Literally, like 30 seconds in or something. And Alan Shearer says the lights have gone off, and so is Danny Murphy's phone. Right, fucking dropping him in it. But they must have, can you imagine in the studio, they must have been running around looking at each other
What the
behind the
yeah
cameras going, who is it? What the fuck? Or
yeah
it's
yeah
best, one of the best stitch ups ever.
ever
So good. Yeah. And that's been the best moment of my week so far by miles.
Amazing. Patrons, thank you so much for your support. Quiz for you tomorrow, Premier League flops. So do
Oh
your
yeah,
research.
I've got to do that.
And we'll be back at you tomorrow. Stay safe. Ciao for now.
Can you Spurs? Cue music, please, man child.
The Fantasy Football Show.